This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, welcome to Tom Radio Hour. I'm your host, Vince.
And I'm your familiar host, Declan. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm alright, man. What's new?
Not much. I did some Christmas shopping, so depending on your outlook on the holidays, that was either good or not.
It's alright. I mean...
Yeah. The mall was crazy.
Did you know Amazon delivers on a Sunday?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, especially if you live in a city.
I got an Amazon delivery today, and I live in the middle of nowhere. It was fucked up. Like, I was like, why are you here? Go home.
Well, Amazon actually stopped, or they're trying to phase out delivering through, like, UPS and other carriers.
Yeah.
So if it's being carried by an Amazon-owned truck, it'll be 7 days a week.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
And they're the same ones that, like, carry the little, like, tablet thing to take a picture of the delivered package to avoid theft.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that?
No. The dude showed up today, and he was like, ding. And I was like, who's ringing my doorbell? Because no one ever rings my doorbell.
And, yeah, they also ring here, too.
Really? It's nuts.
Yeah.
I never, like, whatever. It was a Sunday, and I was sitting on my couch, and I was like, go away.
I actually have it up right now, because the trucks here are all owned by Amazon. Like, it has a little picture of, like, my door and, like, the package right in front of it.
No shit. Well, I'm not the person who ordered it, so I can't look. You know what I mean? Like, if I ordered it, I would look.
Right,
but
right,
I didn't,
yeah.
So I can't. Welcome to this episode.
Yeah, hello.
This episode, we're going to review a movie. We like to do movie reviews when stuff gets hectic. With it being Christmas, people are moving around. So it's going to be more of a relaxed episode. Today we're going to be talking about a movie that I really enjoy called The Omega Man.
It's a good flick.
It stars Charlton Heston.
Can we have an impression, please?
All right.
Perfect.
I was going to wait till I say this, but we tried to record this episode once before. And that's where the recent meme of Declan going, "Are you still recording?" has come from. Because we got 6 minutes in and I realized, or I'm sorry, we got 6 minutes in, my computer said no more recording today, and then we were at the end of like an hour and a half of a great discussion talking about life and theater and all this other great shit, and then we just had to stop and it sucked. Yep. But
if you want, we can include a clip of my half of the recording and just like, oh wait, you're not recording, what the fuck.
Do you have that? Can you clip that and just send me that?
Yeah.
It's right.
What? No, you didn't, did you? Welp. Can you check? Well, that kind of sucks. When did it stop? How many minutes? Fuck. Blame you. Like, I don't know what happened, but... No, I mean, it's... Shit happens. We've lost episodes before.
Here. Awesome. I'm going to wind up doing that a lot. There's a comedian. I think he's a comedian. He was a radio star man who's now on one of Kevin Smith's podcasts called Hollywood Babylon, and he does a Charlton Heston impression, and the whole thing is just, And I've done it a few times since we tried recording it, but, like, every time he would talk, all I would hear is him just like, So before we get into it, I kind of want to set the stage.
Please.
Imagine you're at home one day and you're watching TV, or if you have Hulu with the commercials, or you're just on Twitter mindlessly running through whatever schlock the US or British politics are right now, and you're just going through it, and all of a sudden you see an outbreak of some sort of strange virus in Russia or China or Pakistan or these worlds that, not worlds, these countries that seem like they're worlds away, and only in the sense that they're worlds away because their cultures are depicted as such a different lifestyle from what we have, and such a different understanding from what we have as either, for me at least, as an American, the way I see it, America always kind of seems to itself, but in everybody else's business. Imagine seeing that there's this outbreak, and you don't think much of it. You just think, okay, it's some sort of political strife or some sort of warfare or something going on in the world that you or I or really nobody but the powers that be have any sort of control over. And you just kind of say, all right, whatever. What can I do? Time goes on. You keep hearing about it and hearing about it and hearing about it. And eventually some sort of a larger conflict breaks out, and you have what seems to be like a sickness, a plague, if you will, kind of develop. And over time, there's pockets of people in these other countries that are developing albinism. They're developing an aversion to light, which I think is kind of underneath the albinism, but they're being more primal. It's being reduced to that. And it's like, not like you have to be born with albinism. These are people that are just kind of getting it. And eventually you think, okay, well, this is happening somewhere else in the world. And then slowly there's small pockets of it in the US or in your state or your country. And then it starts moving closer and closer and closer until the point where you're the last person alive. And when I say the last person alive, I mean the last person in a major city, like a Los Angeles, a London, a New York, a Chicago, a Toronto, a Dallas, Seattle, these major cities, and you're the last person there. What you once knew was an average, everyday sort of, you get up, you walk into a sea of nameless faces, and you just kind of go about your day, is now completely gone because you don't see other people. You are the last person there. And most likely, if you see another person, they have succumbed to this affliction, and now they are after you for your differences, for you not conforming to the way the world has changed around you. That's what the Omega Man is.
That was pretty powerful.
Thank you. I was thinking about that for a little while before we started doing this.
Impressive.
Thank you. So just before we get into anything, Charlton Heston, I want to talk a little bit about him, because he's such a like enigmatic figure, if I'm saying that word correctly, within cinema. He's a guy who he started in 1941, and he was in films for over 60 years. He was born in 1923, started in 1941, and died in April of 2008. And if I remember correctly, I don't remember if I have it in these notes or not, but he worked all the way up until like 2002, 2004, 2005. So this is a dude who found his passion and worked his entire life in it. So the IMDb kind of quick blurb about him is, with features chiseled in stone and renowned for playing a long list of historical figures, particularly in biblical epics, the tall, well-built, rugged, handsome Heston was one of Hollywood's greatest leading men and remained active in front of movie cameras for over 60 years. He was in Ben-Hur, The Ten Commandments, Soylent Green, which is a favorite of mine, and Planet of the Apes. And I want to talk about that just because, like, when I think of, like, the classic man, what a man looks like, I think of Charlton Heston.
Like a manly man.
Like, not even just like a manly man, but like a man who's like, ooh, a man who's like, I'm going to get up in the morning and provide for my family. Like, he's like a very, like a classic man.
Like a masculine figure.
Yeah, like, he's what I think of, like, and he there's plenty of scenes in this movie where he doesn't have a shirt on. And he's not buff. Like, he's not. Like, he has, like, a dad bod. But he is what I picture to be, like, masculinity. Like, she is what I picture to, like, puff out your chest, don't shave it, and fucking get to work. Like, he's just, I don't know why, like, I didn't grow up watching his movies. I've seen, obviously, Planet of the Apes and Soylent Green and this.
But he's just, like, he's just so, like, famous for the time, though.
Yeah, like, he's one of those people that, like, everybody knows in some capacity because of, like, he's someone who maybe we're not talking about now, but in another 50, 60 years, people will talk about him for what he did in acting. So the Omega Man is the lone survivor. Dr. Robert Neville struggles to create a cure for the plague that wiped out most of the human race while fighting the family, a savage death cult formed by the zombie-like infected to erase the past. It's a movie that was directed by Boris Sagal, S-A-G-A-I-L, and it is written It's written by John William Carrington, and then his wife Jeanette. Joyce. I'm an idiot. Joyce Carrington. The movie stars Charlton Heston, Anthony Zebre, Zebra. Really?
No.
Oh, I was gonna say. I thought I was saying okay. And Rosalind Clash. It won an NAACP award. I'm sorry. NAACP award nominated for outstanding actress in a motion picture for Rosalind Cash.
She does really she does really well in this movie.
No, yeah, she does a great job. So you know how I said we've recorded this before?
Mm-hmm.
As we recorded this once before, I kind of checked off the notes that we had already gone over. So I'm reading this going, why do these have little check marks? All right.
Oh my gosh.
So I just want to talk about kind of like the ideals of the movie. Like, I have my notes and I can reference them with anything, but I just,
yeah.
Oh, so we reviewed I Am Legend, and this movie is based off the same thing. So the way it kind of was there was a book called I Am Legend, and then this movie got made and it was based off the book called The Omega Man. There's also another version of the Omega Man. Actually, hold on. Let me see if I have the notes. There's another version of the Omega Man somewhere else that was written to a movie. But then when they made I Am Legend, they based it on the Omega Man movie, but they took the name of the book. So it's like
all sorts of all over the place.
Yeah, it's this weird inside-out amalgamation of, like, we're just going to pick from all over the fucking place.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the movie... Do you have anything you want to say?
As of yet, no.
So the movie takes place in Los Angeles, right?
Yes.
Which I think is super neat, because when I think of the apocalypse, I don't necessarily think of LA.
I always think of New York first.
Yeah, well, I think it's also because we're East Coasters.
True.
Early in the film, Neville sees a calendar dated March of 1975, and then remarks that the local cinema has been offering Woodstock, the 1970 film, for the third straight year, indicating that the Omega Man from 71 is set in 1977. Neville himself mentions August 5th, 1977, while recording an audio diary. So it's the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And
boy, is it 70s.
Yeah, and it's the best, like, version of the 70s. I love how, like... They didn't have to get period correct cars because they pretty much already all were. And this is, I believe this is the first time on film the idea of an empty city was portrayed.
Really?
I think. I could be wrong when I say that, but I remember hearing that somewhere before. And there's, like the opening camera shots I love of just this empty, there's one fuck-up.
Oh, they're so cool.
And I tried to find it last time I saw the movie, but there's one fuck-up where there's one guy walking somewhere. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and it's really funny, but I couldn't find it. I read it in the notes on the IMDb, but the shots of an empty Los Angeles, and they have, like, these huge shots of him driving through the city. Almost,
I love him driving through the city.
Yeah, I like...
And almost, I'm glad they ended up keeping that for I Am Legend.
That's what I was going to say. How I Am Legend does it, they do it of him driving through New York, but the camera angle, they almost reverse it for I Am Legend. But that opening scene of him driving, I don't know what street it is, but him driving down somewhere is so just so well done. You know what I mean? And the biggest thing that I thought, not the biggest thing, but something I thought was so neat about it was they wanted to film in a city, but they didn't know what to do. And it turns out during the week, or during the weekend, LA was dead. So you could just go and like film. They would like maybe say like, hey, don't come outside for like an hour or something. But like they would just kind of film outside and crumple up paper and chuck it. But it's a movie that really just really gives you the feeling of being alone. But it doesn't.
And we know that you love that.
Yeah, I do. But it also does it in like this very like strange 70s cinema way where you're alone and you feel alone. I was alone. I acted alone. But like at the same time, you get this. You get this still like he's an action hero.
Yeah, it feels like he's Indiana Jones, just not in a jungle.
Like post-apocalyptic, you know? Indiana Jones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's just so cool.
Yeah, no, this is my favorite kind of movie. I recently just watched 28 Days Later.
That's one I've been wanting to see.
Hey, we're going to review that one sometime. But I just saw it for the first time, and it's another one of those, this is an empty city type of movie. And that's what I really like about it is I like these movies that kind of give you this experience. And I like movies that give you anxiety. I don't like movies that keep you scared. Like, I love The Thing because The Thing is just leaves you on the edge of your seat the entire time. Where you could watch something like The Purge, which is a fucking ridiculous idea of a movie. I love the idea of like...
I would like to review one of The Purge movies at some point. Because they're not particularly good, but I do like them.
Do you really? Why?
I don't. There's something about it, the premise that's just so buck wild that I kind of get drawn into the world building.
I think it's ridiculous. It's like, oh, if we were just all good for the entire year, we get Murder absolutely, Christmas.
It's crazy that Murder Christmas exists. So I'd like to review one of them at some point.
All right, throw it on the list.
Yeah.
But like, it's exploring the ideas of being alone is something that like okay, so he. He has his apartment, which, from what I understand, the apartment that, as of the notes that I took, his apartment that they have set up is still intact somewhere on some studio lot wherever they film this. And he has the whole thing set up with TVs and radios, and he's got a bust of Julius Caesar, and he plays chess with himself with the statue of Caesar, which, again, in I Am Legend, he had the mannequin set up all around the city. The idea of you have to kind of create your own reality, you have to create your own self, you have to create your own environment, I think is super, super interesting to be explored in not just a movie medium, but any medium, to be honest.
Like, otherwise, you go absolutely fucking crazy.
Yeah. But, I want to talk about the movie, but I also want to talk about the movie in more of a sense of the feeling of the movie.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, walk through every plot point and then, like, give it away.
Well, spoiler alert. I forgot to say it earlier. But I do want to talk about what is happening. You watch a man kind of... And, like, one of my favorite scenes is he's driving through the city erratically. And it's like the first scene of the movie. And he's, like, fucking bending corners and he's, like, skirt. And he crashes the car. And he's like, there's never a cop around when you need him. He walks to a dealership, and he has, like, this entire fake interaction where he talks to himself.
I love that conversation.
Yeah, he just talks to himself about how he's like, what if I trade in my Ford? He's like, I'm not crazy on the color. And then fucking just takes the car and leaves. Like, it's...
Yeah, it's nuts.
I love the idea of, I have to make this good, like, for myself. Like, I have to fix... Yeah.
He inserts his own mundane aspects of life into it.
Yeah, then, like, when he goes home, and the family, which is, like I said earlier, this death cult of these people that are... which I want to talk to you about. They're trying to erase the ways of the old world, and in a flashback, they show you the news reporter saying about China, and saying about Russia and Pakistan. And, I mean, this movie's from 77. When was the Cold War?
We're still in it.
Are we? I thought it was over. I thought it was, like, technically over.
In 77?
Yeah, I think it doesn't end.
There were
like
still echoes of Cold War.
Hold on. No, we had this conversation once before. It started in, like, 40-something and didn't end till, like, yesterday.
Oh, it started in 45 and went to 91. So we're neck deep in the Cold War.
Yeah, so we're fucking real deep in the Cold War. I'm not sure if Russia had invaded I want to say Afghanistan, I think it was, I don't know, or not at this point, but everything kind of came to a head in the Cold War in the 80s, as far as I thought. Mm. No, because it wasn't, because of the Contra. And then Ronald Reagan bought cocaine, and then crack cocaine was made to destroy the inner city.
Yeah.
Allegedly. So, the family, they show the news reporter going on and on about how there's these outbreaks and these bombings and whatnot, and eventually you see Charlton Heston at his apartment trying to play chess, and he's kind of winding down for the day. I believe he puts a record on. He's kind of just relaxing and walking around, and out of nowhere he kind of realizes, he goes, "Oh, it's Sunday." He goes, "I always eat meat on a Sunday," or something. He dresses up for dinner on a Sunday. And I'll tell you why I remembered that. And he like leaves, and they show the family, and they're outside of his massive fucking 4-story brownstone.
Like with an elevator.
Like, I'll never get over these big ass houses. And yes, he was a government scientist, and he did develop the cure. They show in a scene that he develops the cure, and he takes off in a helicopter, and the helicopter crashes because the guy who's the pilot gets sick. And I think he gives himself the cure, and he was trying to use his blood.
He administers the cure to himself.
Which, all right, cool. But, like, that part of the movie, I've seen the movie a couple times now, and I remember always being like, wait, that happens? Like, every time.
They really glance over that.
Yeah. So, he winds up having this meal that he wants to have. And he goes to the refrigerator, and he pulls out sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Where the fuck?
Where are you getting that?
Sausage? It's 3 years after the apocalypse. You're gonna tell me there's just fucking... I mean, I guess if it's smoked meat, it's one thing, but still.
Or, like, cured, yeah.
Yeah,
but
3 years, homeboy? Really?
Yeah. I doubt. I'm pressing X on that one.
Pressing X?
Yeah.
Oh, like fucking...
L.A. Noir.
Yeah, yeah, I'm thinking press F to pay respects. You ever play L.A. Noir?
Yeah. Sorry. I have it on Switch. It's actually really fun.
Really?
I haven't finished it. I go in and play a level every once in a while just to try it out. Like,
it's,
I like
yeah.
it.
It's alright. So they show the family, and the family is either in some apartment or they're in some sort of hotel or museum or something, and they're destroying art. And Charlton Heston makes a remark about it. He's like, "Oh, what are you going to do? Plunder a museum? Plunder a library? Like, what are you destroying tonight?" And I wanted to talk to you about, how do you feel about the destruction of the ways of the old world?
I don't like it. It makes me, every time I see one of them destroy like a painting later in the movie, it makes my heart break.
Why?
I don't know. I just really, there's something I feel like that's so sacred about like a piece of art, not necessarily that like the physicality of it, but like that there's meaning behind each piece, and it's like a unique indicator of what someone was going through or of the times. I just think that like it just feels wrong to destroy it.
Okay. What's I agree with you. I agree with you in a sense. I kind of see it in an apocalyptic sense.
Like, if you think about it, the physicality of, like, a painting is canvas and oil and wood.
Yeah.
But it means so much more than that, the way that it's put together.
The way I kind of see it is books are more important than art in that sense, because most likely an encyclopedia or something like that might have pictures of it.
Like, more intellectual value.
Because you can read about history, where you can look at a painting and feel something, but, like, what context are you going to get at it from the old world if you didn't live there? That's why I think a lot of, like, Renaissance paintings are lost on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, I didn't grow up in this. Like, I didn't grow up where, like, you were lucky to hit 25.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know what antibiotics are. So, like...
These people didn't have Twitter.
No, yeah. These people, if you just wanted to scream out into nothingness, they put you... in a building where they beat you with socks or cut out a part of your brain. Like,
Speaking of cutting out part of your brain, do you listen to Lore, the podcast?
It's just called Lore?
Yeah.
No.
It's about, like, just things that have happened in history that are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it and they made a season of it on Amazon Prime where they do, like, animations and have, like, live action, like, in between it. And there's one about, like, the scientist that pioneered the cutting out part of your brain to, like, treat seizures and stuff.
Really?
It's really cool and a little bit dark.
There's a, I don't know what scientist it is, and it might just be from a movie that I'm remembering this, but the guy was so fond of lobotomies, like, he just fucking thought they were, like, the perfect thing to cure people, that he would do them in his office on his lunch break. And all he would
it's the same guy.
Okay, this is a real thing, it's not from a movie? I thought it was from, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Alright. He would, like, shove a fucking piece of metal in their brain and go, like, tick, 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 and it would just lobotomize people.
Yep.
Isn't that nuts? And he did, like, thousands of them.
Yeah, and it, like, happens through the eye.
Ooh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, no. Ooh, gross. Fuck.
Ugh. Yep.
I saw a clip on Mad TV back in the day when I was a kid of eye surgery, and I've never fucking been the same. That's the day I became a man.
Good to know that you're scarred. We're uncovering your hidden childhood trauma together.
Oh my god. I'm gonna cry. Alright, so...
just stick something right in there.
Every time I hear lobotomy, all I think is, lobotomite!
From Big Mountain.
Yeah.
Lobotomite!
What the fuck was I gonna say now? Alright, so the family has this internal conflict where, because... and this is what another part of it that I want to know from your end. Because this is a world that is now long gone, science, math, art, all this shit doesn't matter. And recently I had a conversation with someone and they said to me, like, and I was saying how I think word choice is incredibly important in everything, not just like from writing your mother a happy Mother's Day card to like some sort of an official speech about something. Word choice is incredibly important. And their argument was, no, it isn't. Words should have everything based on feeling and not word. And they were like, well, what if you can't find the words for how you feel? And I said, that's where art comes into play, right? But now, at this stage of an apocalypse where there's, like, 11 people that exist, and 9 of them are trying to kill you, if not more, like, what are you gonna do? Like, none of this shit matters. Like, this shit isn't real. So, like... almost in a weird way, I see Charlton Heston's character, Robert Neville, as the bad guy. Because...
he's trying to hold on to the past.
Yeah, like, humanity...
trying to keep something alive that's basically dead.
And we're just animals. Like, at our core, we're just primates or Neanderthals or whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Yeah.
And we're inherently violent creatures. And only through civilization have we kind of learned to not be scum. But in the entire history of the world, if you blinked your eye, if you watched, like, you've heard the old analogy, if you watched a movie of the world and you blinked at the end real quick, you'd miss humanity completely.
Yeah.
So, like, we're not far from what we originally were when we get reverted back to primates, when we get reverted back to a primal state of humanity. So... he's almost saying, like, this is... He's keeping evolution from... he's keeping... like, he's killing progress. Like, he's not evolving.
At least from the perspective of the family.
I'm saying from a greater look at things. Like, if you looked at everything and you... If there was 100 people in a room and you were told, this is a new species of human, and you were told, oh, 87 of them have black hair and the rest of them have red hair, you'd be like, well, that's some sort of mutation. That's not saying it's wrong, but that's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, why is this the way this is when it's not
one
like
of these
this?
Things is not like the other.
Exactly. Kind of thing. Like it's, and it's 100 people, 86, 87, 88 of them all have features that are the same. The family, they're pale, they have red eyes, they have albinism, they've developed albinism, and they have to wear sunglasses inside and these cloaks. But I think that's a really interesting conflict of the old and the new, and almost as if... And then the new isn't even new, it's old. It's just like... It's like Coke Classic. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same shit, but different. Like...
yeah, it's not like they're so inherently better as, like, as a species... like, whatever their, like, forced evolutionary state is, it's not like they can lift a car over their heads or, like, have like, a supercomputer brain. They're not that much better.
If anything, they're weaker.
Yeah, because they can't be out in the sun.
Yeah, but, you to get back on the track of not just ideals, you watch Neville go through this, and Neville's also, I don't know if I've said this already, but Neville's also, Robert Neville is the same character from I Am Legend with Will Smith. You watch him kind of go through this whole thing of him trying to keep up his sanity by doing things. And like, I love the scene when he goes shopping. Like he goes running in the morning and then he's like, I should go get another sweatsuit. So he's like in a store and like, he's talking to the mannequins and he's like, this isn't my color. And like drops it and like walks over and he's like, maybe last season. Like, I just love these. And he just throws the clothes. Like, he doesn't put it back on the rack. He's like, fuck it. And drops it. Like, And then he winds up seeing somebody who's like, it's a woman person. Who's like a mannequin, and he instantly is like, what the fuck? And runs
and I love that scene where she's like posing like a mannequin, just trying not to be spotted.
Well, he goes after her and he loses her, and he makes a remark after he chases her and she gets away, and he's like, this is how it starts. This is how dying starts.
Mm-hmm.
I can't chase anymore. I'm getting older. And I don't remember how old he was at this point, but he was...
He can't be more than 50.
If that... I mean, it came out in 77. He's born in... What year did I say? He was born in 23. He came out in 77. 30, math. 40, 50, 60, 70. He's in his 50s. So he winds up going back to his house, doing his regular everyday activities, and the family eventually captures him. And when they capture him, they put him to a trial. They put him in a courtroom, and they're, or maybe not a courtroom, but they put him in a room and they kind of serve it
like kangaroo court.
Yeah, and they say to him, like, you are expired. Your way of living is no longer the way we live. And they kind of explain to him, and he's like, you're wrong. And they take him to, I don't know what stadium it is. I want to say it's probably the Chargers because it's
the
Rams
probably.
Or some shit. But they take him there in the middle of the night and they're going to burn him. They're going to put him on a cross and burn him like he's a witch.
Burn him at the stake.
And then, so they wind up taking Charlton Heston to this football stadium. They want to burn him on the cross, and eventually
going to literally burn him at the stake.
Yeah, they turn on all of these lights inside, and it turns out that it's the woman that he saw in the clothing store. It's a woman named Lisa, a black woman named Lisa, and she's there with her friend Dutch, and she's like, I couldn't believe that it was another person alive. And fuck it, hold on. So, Lisa's there, Dutch is there, they take him away from Matthias, and Matthias, sorry, I forgot to mention, is the leader of the family, and Dutch takes Charlton Heston back to, like, his camp, and there's a bunch of people there, and Lisa's like, hey, my brother Richie is dying, he's succumbing to the plague, and we need to fucking fix him, and he's like, I have the cure,
I'm a plague doctor.
Shout out Bentley. And then they wind up getting to... He winds up sort of synthesizing the cure. And I don't want to give away too much without giving away... Mm-hmm. I want to give away, but I don't want to give away everything. But it kind of leads back to... Like, they go back to Charlton Heston's apartment. He synthesizes the cure. The family tries attacking again. They have a fucking catapult.
They do have a catapult.
They have a flaming catapult.
I love a good flaming catapult.
Yeah, it's a real 2.5 out of 3 mil catapult.
It's more like a 2. If it were a trebuchet, really? I'd say easily 2.5.
I mean, my man, how do you think they made it?
Honestly, fair. They didn't have a lot of materials. I'll give you a 2.5 out of 3 mils.
So, they go back, and this movie does an egregious fucking thing, in my opinion. I hate in an apocalypse movie where it's sex because woman.
Yeah, right.
And I've said this before, and it's something that I really liked about I Am Legend, and I actually had this conversation recently when I watched 28 Days Later, is I hate in a movie where it's just, hey, I'm what could be the last male, and you're what could be the last female, so it means I have to have sex with you. Why?
Great, yeah.
Like, why? Like, they're too, like, I get it, and I understand, like, in Walking Dead, when Laurie and Shane were getting it on, like, I get it. You haven't seen a man in a long time, and this is a physical representation of your husband who could be dead because he's been in the hospital, and he was your husband's partner, and there's maybe some weird macho fucking testosterone shit going on. Totally get it. Imply it, then. Don't flat out show it. Like, don't, like, there's a part where they, like, start making out, and he's like,
I don't even remember how this works.
Like, all right, I get it. You gotta fucking, like, it bothers me. It bothers me so much because, like, it takes away, I think it almost, like, takes away how badass of a character the female, like, it takes away how badass Lisa could be.
Because Lisa is so cool.
She saves him from, like 30 dudes in in a fucking football stadium and takes him to safety. And then instantly they get back to his apartment and she becomes like, submissive towards
him.
She becomes his pet.
Women.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing there about her that's unique anymore. She is just there as an emotional barrier if something ever happens to her to get you more invested in the into the character.
Yeah.
She's not there for anything else.
That's probably more of a product of its time. I feel like
fucking happens in movies. It shit still fucking happens in movies. It's the number one trope.
It's the biggest cliche trope ever.
Of fucking here's a guy, here's a girl. We don't get along, but by the end of the movie, somebody's gonna have their meat in somebody else, and then we're gonna hold it against the bad guy's gonna hold it against the good guy for the rest of the movie. This summer, Rob Schneider, like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's like, and yeah, I'm a little more lenient with it because it's of its time. But like, I bet if you went and watched, like, go watch the fucking Meg. You ever see the Meg?
I have not.
It's neither have I. It's a Megalodon movie, like a Megalodon shark movie that was made in America.
They made another one of those?
They make them constantly. But, like, Jaws fucking took off, and then everybody's like, let's make shark movies. Yeah. But it's a movie that was, like, made in America for the Chinese audience.
Hmm.
Because it has, like, a huge Chinese star as, like, the co-star in it, and it takes place, like, it takes place off the coast of China, and, like, it's a movie that they knew, like, 110% was going to fail in America, but they made it because now China's opening up its film laws and shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, in my opinion, like, a predatory movie because it's like, oh, hey, let's just take advantage of a culture and their people that are
already...
Yeah,
like a new market, yeah.
It's fucking what Blizzard's doing. So, haha. Yeah, like, go watch that shit. I bet there's a scene in there where, like, the main character's like, my god, look at this woman. We shouldn't be together, but now we are. And then it's fucking the shark's like, got a gun to the woman, and the guy's like, no. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just
the shark has a gun.
I just wrote a summer blockbuster. Shark gun shark.
I do like gun shark.
Gun shark.
Half gun shark. Half shark. All business.
Like, get the fuck out of here. But eventually, they wind up becoming a couple, I guess. They save Richie, and then it gets to the point where Lisa is trying to regain that sense of normalcy. So she's like, hey, Charlton Heston, I'm going into the stores. You mind if I borrow your credit cards? He's like, And then she, like, leaves. But, like, they wind up going to his old lab, and they get these blood samples and shit, and they go and they try to fucking fix everybody, and they wind up making great progress. Yeah. And Richie's like, you're no better than them, Charlton Heston. I was just sick a minute ago, but you're no better than them. And he's like,
if I knew where they all were, I'd mow them all down.
I feel like when I do that voice, I sound a little bit like Reagan.
You do.
And then he's like, they're in the courthouse. Richie's like, they're in the courthouse, you fuck. And he's like, oh. And then he, like, doesn't go to kill them. And he's like, I knew it. So then Richie, like, goes to tell them. He's like, hey, I have the cure. And Matthias is like, stop it. You're dead now. And they wind up killing him because he had the cure. Yeah. And Charlton Heston's like, I have to go save the boy. Ah. So he runs to go get him. And he, like, drives a car. And there's this awesome crash. That it's,
yo,
like,
yeah,
it's
the crash scene 70s, is cool.
It's such a 70s movie thing. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's just like, hey, we got an extra, like, 30 grand in the budget. I don't know why I'm checking my watch. But you wanna just throw a car into a building? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they do it. And, like, Lisa turns, and then Matthias gets into Charlton Heston's apartment. He tries to run back, and Lisa, like, let them in, because now she's turned, and he's like, hey, you see all this shit around you that, like, you love, and it's the reminder
old world
of the old
will be
world?
Destroyed.
Yeah, we're gonna destroy all of it. So they, like, beat the shit out of all of his shit. Caesar goes down.
Yeah, fucking Caesar. Man, they stabbed
that
Brute.
Guy. Yeah, he's gone. And then they smash
and they burn all
shit.
The art.
They burn all the art, and then he, like, gets out, and he runs across, like, the street, and there's this fountain there. And Lisa's there, and he's, like, trying to grab Lisa, and he's like, hey, woman, I love you. And she's like, and then Matthias is like, hey there, stop it. And come to me, I am Matthias. And he, like, she, like, looks over, and he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. And then Matthias, like, just throws a spear at Charlton Heston, and he dies, and he falls into the lake, and it looks like Christ. And he's got, like, vial. He's got, like, hold on. He's got, like, this fucking Pepsi bottle of blood. Like,
yeah.
He's just carrying around this Pepsi bottle. And it's, like,
and it has, like, the cure.
Yeah, but it's,
and then,
like,
he falls into the friend's fountain.
Yes, you beat me to it. The fountain that he fucking falls into is the fucking fountain that they filmed Friends with.
I cannot believe. When you first told me that, I could not believe it. I had to go rewatch the scene.
Yeah, and, I mean, I like the movie a lot. I'm kind of giving, like, a rough overview because I don't want to ruin everything, but I want to tell
you what it's definitely worth a watch, and it's a classic in terms of post-apocalypse, and, like, it's
cinema. Just
it's done a lot for the apocalypse genre, and I think it was a really good... It was a good movie, and it was something that hadn't been done in its time.
Yeah, I have a couple of what's it called? I have a couple of, help me out here, Declan. Some fun facts.
Fun facts.
Sorry,
I was taking
a sip
of water.
Oh, you're good. The production company wanted a location that looked like an abandoned metropolitan area, but it was too costly to build. The producer drove through downtown Los Angeles, one weekend and discovered there was no shoppers, so majority of the film's exterior shots were shot there on the weekend. Rosalind Cash, who plays Lisa, was uneasy before her love scene with Charlton Heston, saying, "It feels strange to screw Moses." Now, the first time we recorded this, I didn't understand what that meant, because I thought it meant that he was Moses in the sense that he was saving the people, like he was leading them out of Egypt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but he quite literally played Moses.
Like, I didn't think of that. The facade or set used for Neville's fortress or home still stands relatively unchanged on the Warner Brothers Ranch parking lot Boulevard, which is formerly Columbia Boulevard in Burbank. It could be easily seen using Google Maps 3D. The facade faces east to southeast. Early in the film, Neville sees a calendar. I already read that one. Charlton Heston had approached Orson Welles originally to direct the film. That would have been fucking... Imagine, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. The film takes place in August of 77 in David Shipman's Great Movie Stars. Okay, it's a book. In David Shipman's Great Movie Stars, The International Years, he states that Charlton Heston's salary was $300,000. But I believe we did the math on that, and it's like, I want to say like $2.7 million?
Yeah, that sounds about right. It was around $2.7 million.
Look that up quick from 71. So there's a little bit of bias in this, but this is kind of the thing I was talking about where it's based on a movie based on a book. The film is the second of four films based on the 1954 novel I Am Legend by author, actor, and screenwriter Richard Matheson.
How much money did he make?
$300,000.
And you said
300,000,
1971. 71, submit. What would cost $300,000 in 1971 would cost, hold on, they don't put any commas in here, $1.8 million.
Oh, wow, I was off by about $900,000.
Yeah.
But still, so I'm going to start over real quick. This film is the second of four films based on the 1954 novel I Am Legend by author, actor, and screenwriter Richard Matheson. The first film was arguably the best adaptation of the book thus far, despite a few flaws, was The Last Man on Earth from 1964, starring Vincent Price. And the third film was I Am Omega. I'm sorry, this was the second movie, I Am Omega, in 2007, which was a mockbuster of the adaptation from 2007 called I Am Legend, starring Will Smith, and Night of the Living Dead from 1968 was also heavily inspired by the book. Interestingly, some of the scenes of Neville shopping with Lisa around the abandoned L.A. are reminiscent of Dawn of the Dead, the film sequel Dawn of the Dead of 1978 from Living Dead.
So there's a lot of tie-ins here.
There's fucking layers on layers on layers on layers, yes.
What is it, a Photoshop file?
The television newscaster reporting at the beginning of the film later is shown to be Matthias before he started the family. The film was filmed in October and November of 1970. According to Charlton Heston's diary entries for the making of the film, he wrote how he was beginning to tire of being the action hero at this point in his career. And the fountain is...
I'm too busy being cool, guys, just so you know.
I think it'd be like, he just wants to be sad in a movie for once.
Yeah, I'd love to just be like killed and be the Christ with a bottle of Coke and blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the movie. It's a fucking piece of classic cinema.
Yeah, definitely a classic.
I'm still recording. We finally got this one finished. Yeah, right. I'm trying to think if there's anything. Oh, there's a really offhanded racist comment in this movie.
Oh yeah, really weird.
There's a part where Lisa's talking to Charlton Heston, and she's like, "Wow, I never thought I'd ever see a fit." Or she's like, "I don't think I'll ever see fresh trees or fresh fruit or a stream filled with fish." And he looks over, he goes, "Where did you ever see a stream of fish in Harlem?"
Yeah, right? It was like, dude, really
you just
weird.
Slept with her. Give her a fucking minute. Like, goddamn, yeah. Dude. Like, I get it's the 70s, but fucking, you don't have to hit her. Like,
wasn't this movie one of the first depictions of an interracial couple in
cinema? I believe
cinema?
You are correct. I know the first interracial kiss is Shatner, and that's on TV is Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. I have.
It was definitely. It definitely was trailblazing, though.
Okay.
Like, whether it was the first or not, it was significant for the time.
I just have a couple, like, notes here that I want to go over real quick.
Yeah, sure.
It's based on the book I Am Legend, but that's more about vampires. There's a piece on the... I have the Blu-ray, and there's a piece on there about from the director and a documentary thing that's really, really beautifully done. And it's Charlton Heston interviewing a doctor, or Dr. Ashley Montague, who's a doctor of anthropology. And he kind of has this whole conversation with him about how the apocalypse would take an effect on the psyche and kind of what you would have to do and how you'd have to feel and how you'd have to overcome all of it. That's really, really interesting.
That's really cool. I didn't get the Blu-ray. I saw the streaming version on Amazon.
Yeah. The theatrical trailer is fucking awesome. And it's just such a different era of cinema that I really, really like. Most of my favorite movies are from, like, the 60s and the 70s. I like film grain a lot too, but it's just a different era of acting. It's a different way movies were made. It's kind of like gold. I don't want to say golden age Hollywood because, I mean, we're definitely in the tinfoil age because everything's either a sequel, a remake, or a superhero movie. There's no fucking original ideas. My favorite movie of 2019 was Joker, by the way. So, I mean, they can do it right. It's just,
yeah. Just that things are kind of hit or miss. So.
Yeah, there's no original ideas. The only original idea we had this year that I saw in a theater, in a widespread release theater, was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that's a movie about talking for 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I liked it, but whatever. I'm over it. Fuck it. what would you rate this movie?
I would rate this movie 2.1 out of 3 milks.
Okay. I'm going to give it 7.9 out of 10.
Okay. Okay, yeah. We're around the same grading scale then.
Yeah, you're a little high. You're a little higher, yeah. You're probably like, yeah.
Mine's a little lower.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm sorry.
A little higher.
Because I'm thinking fucking 66%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's kind of where we all started from in the terms of the apocalypse. Like I said, there's another movie that kind of delves into it, and I'm sure there's other movies about being the last man. Like, the tagline of the movie is, and I'm going to botch this, and I know I have it in my notes, but I'm not sure where, the last man on Earth isn't, or pray for the last man on Earth because he isn't, or something like that. It's my favorite type of idea to explore, and that's everyone being dead. So, do you have any final thoughts? Anything you want to say?
Anyone who's a fan of post-apocalypse is going to find some joy out of this movie, so I recommend that you guys go check it out. Either, like, buy it, rent it. I think it was, like, $4 to rent on Amazon.
That's a lot.
It's definitely...
I mean, it's not bad. If you went to a Blockbuster, it'd be the same.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. I recommend it. I think it's a good flick.
I like it, too. All right.
Yeah.
I think that's everything we have for this week. Sorry, it might be a little... What's our time?
Our time is 52.
All right, it's about the same. So, with editing, it's going to be like 50. All right, everybody, take care. What day is this coming out?
This day is coming out...
Oh, Declan, this is our episode right before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Merry Christmas, if that's a thing you do.
Yeah, have a happy holiday season, my folks.
Yeah, and then we'll have one more episode right before New Year's. Wow. The last episode of fucking 2019 is going to be episode 77. Wow. Fucking bananas. Alright. See you later. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
Thank you so much, guys, for listening to our show today. This was our 75th plus one episode. Just thanks for supporting us. This was an Atomic Movie Hour, so it was a little bit more laid back. But you can catch us next week to get back onto our regularly scheduled programming. Now, if you want to follow us on social media, you can find all those links in the description below. And I'll probably drop a link to where to check out the movie on Amazon or other streaming and purchasing platforms. We have a merch store that is our Redbubble. If you want to check out that stuff, you can get it at the link below. And I would be remiss to forget our beautiful, beautiful patrons. We have the Friendly Companion Cube. We also have Noah. We have Mason, Gage, and Jordan with a Y. So thank you guys for supporting the show. Remember, Atomic Radio Hour will never be a paid thing. It's always going to be available to you. But if you drop us a couple coins, it can always be better and better. And we really, really appreciate it. If you watched on YouTube, thank you. Remember to leave a rating, a comment. We read all the comments. And remember to share with your friends. Vince already left, but I am going to... I'm just going to give you a little wave. See you later.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.